Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 848. Welcome to Snake in the Baltic States. This is being recorded on May 30th of the year 2015. The title, Walking the Snake, obviously is a reference to the book, The Nazi Tracked Serpent's Walk, which we have spoken about in the past. That is a publication of National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance, which discusses a Nazi takeover of the U.S. in the mid-21st century. That takeover takes place at the hands of the descendants of the SS, who have gone underground, built up their economic muscle, and bought into the opinion-forming media after the U.S. is decimated by a series of terrorist attacks using WMDs. Martial law is declared, and the descendants of the SS, basically the underground Reich, take over the U.S. They have infiltrated the army in the meantime, and the key to the realization of the Serpent's Walk scenario is the control of the opinion-forming media and the complete reversal of historical and political reality to make the Nazis out to be good guys and their opponents as demons, the Jews in particular. In the past, we have spoken of a passage from Mein Kampf, Hitler's autobiography and political manifesto, that says, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations will long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end." That is the concept of the big lie, and we're seeing that in particular with regard to the Ukraine and also the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, which will be the focal point of what we're talking about in this program. As I have said in the past in discussion of Serpent's Walk, I think it is far more than the novel it purports to be. I think it is a manifesto and a blueprint for things to come. And what we are witnessing in the Baltic states at this time is the political resuscitation of Baltic Waffen-SS veterans and the recasting of those Waffen-SS veterans as anti-communist or national and or nationalist liberators. They are being recast as freedom fighters. That is taking place in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, as we will see next week when we return and when we institute another installment of Walking the Snake in Ukraine. The same thing is happening in Ukraine, and indeed Ukrainian and German, Austrian, and Waffen-SS veterans from other countries other than the Baltics are streaming to these particular marches because marches honoring the SS are illegal at this point in time in those countries. Furthermore, what is taking place in connection with these marches is not only the reversal of historical and political fact, but also the tutoring of so-called neo-Nazis by many of these Waffen-SS veterans. In our recent interviews with Peter Lavenda, the author of the book The Hitler Legacy, we talked about the fact that the term neo-Nazi really is not appropriate because these Nazis, the new generation, are learning from and are being spawned by those of the old generation. And in addition to the recasting of the Waffen-SS in the Baltics and elsewhere as freedom fighters, nationalists, heroes, and other things, we are also seeing the official sanctioning of these marches by some of the governments and governmental officials in the Baltic states. And we should note that connected with this also is a profound xenophobia in which non-Estonians or non-Latvians or non-Lithuanians are being stigmatized and basically labeled as undesirables. And again, this is taking place with a certain amount of governmental collaboration in the Baltic states. So those are some of the things to keep an eye on. Also, I would note that the Canadian government is actively supporting commemorations of the 14th Waffen-SS, or Galician Division. That is a Ukrainian SS division about whom we will have more to say later, and about whom we spoke at considerable length in For the Record program 781. Also note here that one of the organizations that has been revived is a paramilitary group in Lithuania called the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union, which, like the OUNB and other Eastern European fascist groups that collaborated with the Third Reich, they were among the groups that carried on a guerrilla war in Eastern Europe, an actual shooting war, basically, in effect, switching uniforms from being Third Reich allies to U.S. and Western allies. This was done under the auspices of the Office of Policy Coordination, headed up by Frank Wisner. We spoke about that in AFA program number 1 and came back to it, reprised it in, For the Record, 777. So the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union, like the OUNB and the Ukrainian Partisan Army, one of the groups that basically was used as paramilitary combatants by elements of U.S. intelligence. Basically, in effect, they simply switched uniforms from Nazi Germany to the OPC/State Department/CIA. And we're going to very quickly plunge into some articles, and then we are going to reprise a section of AFA 36 talking about how these very same types of elements were nurtured within the bowels of the State Department, U.S. intelligence, and the GOP, then projected into Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union after the end of the Cold War. We're going to begin with an article, 4 Baltic Marches, 1 Dangerous Racist Trend. This is by Ephraim Zuroff of I-24 News of February 15th of 2015. The article reads in part, "This coming week we'll see the opening of what I refer to as Baltic Neo-Nazi Ultra-Nationalistic March Month," unquote. Within exactly 29 days, 4 such marches will take place in the capital cities of the Baltic European Union members, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. And while there are obviously different local nuances, the similarities between the marches are far too numerous to ignore, reflecting a dangerous trend which deserves to be treated seriously by Brussels. All the marches are being sponsored by right-wing organizations with fascist sympathies and zero tolerance for local minorities. Skipping down. The sponsors also share a critical view of the accepted narrative of World War II and the Holocaust, which includes the extensive and zealous collaboration by tens of thousands of Lithuanians, Latvians, and Estonians in the mass annihilation of not only their fellow Jewish citizens, but also of thousands of Jews deported from elsewhere in Europe to the Baltic countries to be murdered there, as well as tens of thousands of Jews murdered by security police units from Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia in Belarus. As far as the organizers are concerned, the real, quote, genocide, unquote, was that supposedly committed in the Baltics by the communists, whereas the Holocaust was primarily a respite from the 2 periods of Soviet repression and persecution in 1940-41 and 1944 through 1991. The revisionist bent of the marchers was boldly evident in both Lithuania and Latvia in previous such events. Thus, for example, the Latvian march is ostensibly to honor the locals who fought alongside the Nazis in the 2 Latvian SS divisions, whom the marchers seek to portray as Latvian freedom fighters. Among these so-called Latvian heroes, unquote, were quite a few former members of the Latvian security police who had actively participated in the mass murders of Jews, local and foreign. In Lithuania, prominently displayed among the nationalist heroes was Juozas Ambazavičius, the prime minister of the Lithuanian Provisional Government established in July of 1941, which fully supported the Third Reich and encouraged Lithuanians to participate in the mass murder of their fellow Jewish citizens. Hardly a qualification for glorification. At these marches, Lithuanian swastikas, a slightly altered version of the Nazi original to avoid legal problems, were a very common sight. All four marches are being held in the main avenues of the capital cities, and three of them are celebrations of local independence days, skipping down. The combination of exclusionist nationalist slogans with the achievement of freedom for the Baltic peoples is a toxic combination which sends a racist, xenophobic, and anti-Semitic message which, at least in theory, runs counter to the values of the European Union. More about these marches. This also by Ephraim Zuroff, Z-U-R-O-F-F, from the International Business Times of March 3rd of 2015. Nazi Hunter, by the way, that is a reference to Ephraim Zuroff, who works with the Wiesenthal Center. Nazi Hunter, even Putin would condemn Nuremberg-esque parades in Estonia, unquote. The torchlight parade held by right-wing ultra-nationalists last week in the Estonian capital of Tallinn, T-A-L-L-I-N-N, reminded the Russian journalists covering the event of similar spectacles in Nazi Germany, skipping down. Those journalists were out in full force this past Tuesday night, but unfortunately, they were the only foreign television journalists covering the event, with not a single representative of any European Union member country's media in attendance, skipping down. The European Union does not appear to be particularly perturbed by genuinely disturbing phenomena in the Baltic countries and elsewhere, which, of course, would in no way justify Russian aggression, but deserve to be handled seriously and promptly before they get out of hand. Tuesday's march, which was sponsored by the Blue Awakening Youth Movement, closely affiliated with the Estonian Conservative People's Party, or EKRE, was a good example of at least one of the major problems we increasingly encounter in post-communist Eastern Europe, and especially in the Baltics. I am referring to the rise of ethnocentric sentiment, a euphemism for racism, anti-Semitism, and xenophobia. Thus, the march was publicized under the slogan of Estonia for Estonians, the explicit message of zero tolerance for Estonia's minorities, among them families who have lived in the country for generations. The announcement also bore the symbols of the sister parties in Lithuania and in Latvia, whose platforms advocate the same ethnocentricity. In addition, the only sign I saw, besides the one held by the lead marchers, which said, "For Estonia," unquote, for a white supremacy message. In fact, IB Times UK reported not that long ago on a statement by Mart, M-A-R-T, Helme, H-E-L-M-E, a leading member of the EKRE, who said that the policy in Estonia towards Africans should be, quote, "If you're black, go back," unquote, skipping down again. As past marches by Baltic ultranationalists have clearly demonstrated, one of their goals is to rewrite the narrative of World War II and the Holocaust to hide the extensive, lethal complicity of local Nazi collaborators and promote the canard of historical equivalency between communist and Nazi crimes, often commonly referred to as, quote, the double genocide theory, unquote. A very important element of this campaign is the glorification of certain anti-communists despite their participation in the persecution and murder of their fellow Jewish citizens during the Holocaust. This element was on display last week in Kaunas, Lithuania, and will certainly be featured in Vilnius and Riga in the marches scheduled for mid-March. In Estonia, This revisionism is on display at the annual gathering of SS veterans held in Sinnamae, S-I-N-I-M-A-E, I'm probably mispronouncing that, every summer, and hosted by the veterans of the 20th Estonian Waffen-SS Grenadier Division, which is attended by SS veterans from other European countries, and what such gatherings are illegal. One of those is Sweden. From the Allgemeiner of January 31st of 2012, we have an article by Per Anders, A-N-D-E-R-S, Rudling, R-U-D-L-I-N-G. The Waffen-SS as freedom fighters. Despised and ostracized, the Swedish community of Waffen-SS volunteers has gathered in secrecy on the Day of the Fallen for obscure, ritualistic annual gatherings at a cemetery in a Stockholm suburb. Since the 1990s, these rituals have not needed to be clandestine. The few, now very elderly survivors now head to Sinnamae, Estonia, where they feel that they are getting the honor to which they are entitled. Here, Swedish, Norwegian, Austrian, German, and other Waffen-SS veterans from Western European countries that do not allow such marches meet up with their Estonian comrades. The annual gatherings include those who volunteered for ideological reasons and who are today actively passing on their experiences to a new generation of neo-Nazis. In previous years, Mart Laar, L-A-A-R, the Estonian Minister of Defense, sent official greetings to the veterans. Estonian government endorsement of these events means, in effect, that an EU member state is underwriting the Waffen-SS veterans' own claims that they constituted a pan-European force who were, moreover, pioneers of European unification. According to the Paga Zeitung, this March, the Estonian Parliament will consider a new law which formally designate the Estonian Waffen-SS veterans as freedom fighters, unquote. The law, promoted by Mart Laar, L-A-A-R's right-wing nationalist Isama party, represents a fourth attempt by the Isama to pass such a law. Previous efforts were made in 2005, 2006, and 2010. Last winter, the Estonian Prime Minister Andrus Ansip, A-N-S-I-P, sent the Estonian Waffen-SS veterans a letter in which he thanked them for their service to the Estonian people. In doing so, Estonia would confirm its leading role in rehabilitating the Waffen-SS. Across Europe, Waffen-SS veterans and their admirers are following the developments in Estonia and Latvia. Nowhere in Europe have these veterans been recognized by governments. The Estonians and Latvians were and are breaking a taboo, setting a precedent for others to follow, skipping down. Like their Scandinavian comrades, the German Waffen-SS veterans perceive themselves as a victimized and misunderstood group, second-class citizens, victims of Victor's justice. They have generally not been entitled to state pensions for veterans. Outside of Europe, Waffen-SS veterans have been more successful in gaining acceptance for their own narrative. In Canada, government authorities, in the name of multiculturalism, have agreed to share the construction costs for monuments with the Association of the Ukrainian Veterans of the 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS, or 1st Ukrainians, better known as the Waffen-SS Galician. Public institutions of higher education institute endowments in the honor of Ukrainian Waffen-SS volunteers. That last sentence again. Public institutions of higher education institute endowments in the honor of Ukrainian Waffen-SS volunteers. This is in Canada, by the way. To the disappointment of the extreme right in Ukraine, former President Viktor Yushchenko, in office 2005-2010, did not follow up his rehabilitation of the most important interwar Ukrainian fascist organization, the OUN, with the rehabilitation of the Waffen-SS Galician. To the Ukrainian far right, Latvia and Estonia had become a source of inspiration and an example to emulate. Much like the current Estonian Prime Minister, Anders ONSIP, ANSIP, the leading Ukrainian ultranationalist party, the All Ukrainian Association Svoboda, which dominates local politics in several Western Ukrainian cities, denies that honoring Waffen SS veterans has anything to do with neo-Nazi ideology. In April of 2011, Svoboda celebrated the 68th anniversary of the establishment of the Waffen SS Galician. Lvov was decorated with billboards referring to the veterans of the Waffen SS Galician as the treasure of the nation, unquote, accompanied by the slogan, quote, they defended Ukraine, unquote. The far right marched through Lvov with cries like Galicia, division of heroes, unquote, and one race, one nation, one fatherland, unquote. In time for the Euro 2012, a Waffen SS Galician taxi company was established. These processes are interlinked. The Estonian and Latvian government's partial recognition granted their presumably heroic Waffen SS veterans is part of a larger narrative of apologetics and obfuscation. Skipping down again. In fact, a Nazi victory for which the Waffen SS was employed would have meant the permanent disappearance of Estonia, the population which was earmarked for destruction by the Generalplan Ost, which stipulated that only 50% of Estonians could be Germanized. That discussion would have thereby precluded this discussion in the first place. And skipping down again, unlike most plants, these sort of cults grow in the shade. The Estonian government does not want international exposure on this, yet that is exactly what is needed. The nostalgia for the Waffen SS freedom fighters is not merely an Estonian concern, it is a European concern, it is an international concern. And I would also note that a long-standing paramilitary organization in Lithuania, the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union, has been revived, supposedly in response to a, quote, Russian threat, unquote. And I would note a couple of things. First of all, there is evidence that members of this organization had, in fact, collaborated with the Nazis in perpetrating atrocities in Lithuania. And beyond that, they had conducted, as I indicated at the top of the program, they had conducted guerrilla warfare until the early 1950s. We talked about that in AFA1 and in, for the record, 777. This initially was begun under the command of the Third Reich, and then they basically, in effect, switched uniforms to the OPC/CIA under Frank Wisner. An article, an Agence France Presse article from the Global Post of September 2nd of 2014, Russian threat sees rebirth of Lithuania paramilitary group. And skipping down, talking about the history of the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union. The Riflemen's Union, quote, has left an indelible mark on the history of Lithuania, says historian Arvydas Anasauskas, A-N-U-S-A-U-S-K-A-S, skipping down again. Its reputation is, however, tainted by allegations that certain members were involved in a series of Nazi massacres between 1940 and 1944 that claimed the lives of an estimated 80 to 100,000 Jews, Poles, and Russians in Panierai, P-A-N-I-E-R-A-I, a suburb skirting the capital, Vilnius. The Riflemen's Union was banned in 1940 by the Soviet Union when the Red Army swept in from the east to occupy Lithuania during World War II, but members fought a guerrilla war against the Soviets until the early 1950s. That basically an extension of the combat of World War II and being sponsored by elements of Western intelligence. Again, for the record, 777 and AFA program number 1 go into that at considerable length and in considerable detail. In a number of programs such as, for the record, 465, we have spoken about, and also AFA 37, the Crusade for Freedom. That was an illegal domestic covert operation which was also married, so to speak, to the use of these Lithuanian fascist formations as, quote, freedom fighters, except this time by elements of U.S. and Western intelligence. The Crusade for Freedom also brought these creatures into the U.S., where in addition to working with CIA and other intelligence services, they became a key part of the Republican Party. This operation was the godchild of Alan Dulles. It was overseen by Richard Nixon, and was the its chief spokesperson was Ronald Reagan, and the State Department official who brought these people into the U.S. illegally was William Casey, who became the manager for Ronald Reagan's 1980 presidential campaign and then became Reagan's CIA director. These Republican Nazis basically were installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party, whereas previously they were only resuscitated during presidential election years. They were installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party by then head of the Republican National Committee, George Herbert Walker Bush, the elder George Bush, for whom CIA headquarters is named. What we're going to do now is to jump back to into the archives to February of 1991, and we're going to listen to a portion of AFA 36, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And what you're going to listen to is the projection of some of these World War II-era fascists back into the political and civic life of Lithuania, and those fascist or Nazi seeds have now sprouted. Here is an excerpt from AFA 36 in February of 1991.
We're now going to go into a very important and very terrifying article that once again is carried in Covert Action Information Bulletins issue number 35 from the fall of 1990. This is an article entitled NED Meddles in Lithuania. That's a subtitled NED, that stands for the National Endowment for Democracy, a very inappropriately named organization, as we shall see, but NED meddles in Lithuania. Its full title is Nurturing Baltic Reaction. The author is Philip Bonosky, B-O-N-O-S-K-Y. The bio information on Bonosky is as follows. Philip Bonosky was born of Lithuanian immigrant parents and has made frequent trips to Lithuania. He recorded some of his impressions in the book Beyond the Borders of Myth, New York, Praxis Publishers, 1970. And in this particular article, Philip Bonosky goes into not only the very obvious and apparently ongoing U.S. involvement with the Lithuanian independence movement, and it should be noted that it was a recent Soviet military crackdown in the Baltic states, but beyond that, it points out the enormous residual Third Reich political activity inside Lithuania under U.S. sponsorship, the main vehicle for residual Third Reich activity inside of Lithuania, are two closely linked organizations, the New York-based Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, LCRA, and the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC. The LCRA and the LIC are very closely linked here. They, in turn, have received heavy funding from the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, an inappropriately named organization, which has basically been used by U.S. intelligence and the military to interfere in the affairs of foreign countries for quite some time. We're going to begin reading this particular article, once again subheaded NED Meddles in Lithuania, Nurturing Baltic Reaction by Philip Bonosky. It reads, we're not going to read absolutely all of the article, but the vast bulk of it. The first section here, some history of Lithuania is gone into, and in particular, the descriptions of those two organizations, LCRA and LIC, are laid out. In April of 1990, the Soviet Republic of Lithuania startled the world by declaring itself independent of the USSR. The U.S. has not yet recognized Lithuania as independent, and Bush's political remarks have been moderate. But beneath this facade of calm statecraft, there runs a familiar current of silent U.S. involvement in the political affairs of another country. The most visible intervention has been via the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, which has supplied funds, equipment, and advice to the principal nationalist opposition party, Sąjūdis, spelled S-A-G-U-D-I-S. I would interrupt here. There are a number of Lithuanian names here that I'm going to be reading. My Lithuanian is non-existent. I may be mispronouncing some of these names. The listeners will bear with me. I'm going to do the best I can, but I've never heard most of these words spoken aloud, so I'm going to basically shoot from the hip if I incorrectly mispronounce many of these names, and I'd be willing to bet I do. Well, don't shoot the piano player. He's doing the best he can. So I'm going to improvise on the pronunciation of these Lithuanian names. Continuing. NED has chosen to funnel its Lithuanian aid through one organization, the New York-based Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, or LCRA, and its propaganda arm, the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC. These two organizations are run by arch-conservative Catholic clergy. The founder, current board chair, and the man who has, quote, presided over the steady growth and increasing effectiveness, unquote, of LCRA, Bishop Vincentas Burgess, and his name is spelled V-I-N-C-E-N-T-A-S, and Burgess, and I'm not sure how that's pronounced, is B-R-I-Z-G-Y-S, was allegedly a Nazi collaborator during World War II. One more time, the founder, current board chair, and the man who has, quote, presided over the steady growth and increasing effectiveness of LCRA, Bishop Vincentas Burgess, was allegedly a Nazi collaborator during World War II. Burgess vehemently denies the charge. Sejudis itself is linked in a variety of ways to the symbols and sentiments of the fascist and Nazi periods in Baltic history. And we're now going to go into, in the next section, those Nazi and fascist periods. Lithuania lies on the eastern shore of the Baltic Sea, bordered on the south by Poland, on the north by the Latvian SSR, and on the east by the Belarusian SSR. It is the westernmost extent of the Soviet Union, with a population, as of 1980, of just over 3 million. In the 14th century, invading Germans conquered the area and imposed the Catholic faith. In the modern era, Lithuania has been repeatedly buffeted by the shifting political and military map of Europe. Lithuania declared independence from Tsarist Russia in 1918, but in 1926, the Nationalist Party took power through a military coup. Declaring himself president, Augustas Voldemaris, AugustusVoldemares, and his premier, Antanas Smetona, AntanasSmetona, shaped Lithuania into Europe's second fascist state, based explicitly on the example of Mussolini's Italy. That last sentence again. Declaring himself, well, let me read those last two sentences again. Lithuania declared independence from Tsarist Russia in 1918, but in 1926, the Nationalist Party took power through a military coup. Declaring himself president, Augustas Voldemaris and his premier, Antanas Smetona, shaped Lithuania into Europe's second fascist state, based explicitly on the example of Mussolini's Italy. Lithuania remained a dictatorship until 1939, when Smetona fled to the U.S., and a new parliament voted unanimously to become a constituent republic of the USSR. With the German invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941, Lithuania's nationalists returned briefly to power and assisted the Nazis in the swift, systematic slaughter of more than 130,000 Lithuanian Jews, communists, and other, quote, undesirables, unquote. Let's sum up this particular section, because it's important that we understand this before we proceed into the rest of the article. First of all, the main vehicles, and they are interrelated, for the U.S. covert action inside Lithuania are the Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, or LCRA, and the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC, they in turn being used by the National Endowment for Democracy. It should be noted here, perhaps in this context, that in Radio Free America number 17, we went into the long-standing pattern of cooperation between elements of the Catholic Church, the Vatican, and fascism. This is not meant as an impugnment of the Catholic faith. I pointed out extensively in that particular broadcast, one should not equate the Vatican with Catholicism any more than you should equate the White House with the United States as a whole. But it's worth noting in this context. It's worth noting again that Lithuania had been part of the Russian Empire for many years. It declared its independence in 1918 when the Bolshevik Revolution occurred. In 1926, the Nationalist Party, about which we will say more in a minute, took power, and that the Nationalist Party specifically shaped Lithuania into the second European fascist state, specifically modeled on the example of Mussolini's Italy. By the way, we went into Mussolini's fascist state, the corporate state, in Uncle Sam at Il Duce, subtitled American Support for Mussolini and the Mythology of the Corporate State. So mainly we want to bear in mind here Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid and the Lithuanian Information Center, their support from the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, and bear in mind Lithuania's explicitly fascist past, actually appropriate, because as we're going to see, Lithuania's past and Lithuania's present are converging in a very disturbing fashion. Continuing with the description of how NED has become involved in Lithuania. In April of 1990, a 34-year-old American, William J.H. Huff, H-O-U-G-H III, was very busy in Lithuania. Huff was sent to Lithuania, although he doesn't speak Lithuanian, as legal advisor to Vytautas Landsbergis, the leader of the Nationalist Party. By the way, the leader's name is Vytautas Landsbergis. That last sentence again. In April of 1990, a 34-year-old American, William J.H. Huff III, was very busy in Lithuania. Huff was sent to Lithuania, although he doesn't speak Lithuanian, as legal advisor to Vytautas Landsbergis, the leader of the Nationalist Party. He was recommended by LCRA-LIC, which the U.S. press has cited as very enthusiastic about his work. Cooperating closely with Huff, LCRA-LIC has supplied Sejudis with paper, photocopy machines, computers, laser printers, fax machines, and video cameras. With additional political and technical expertise, Vilnius quickly became a communications hub for secessionist forces in Lithuania and other Soviet republics. And I would note in that context, on the back of this issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, there is a photograph of members of the Ukrainian Nationalist Organization arriving in Vilnius to voice their support for independence. The UN-UPA we went into in Radio Free America shows 1. We went back into it in 14 and 15, as well as in the miscellaneous archive show Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign. That was a major organization which cooperated first with the Third Reich and later with the Galen Organization, CIA, and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. Continuing with Banovsky's article about nurturing Baltic reaction, talking about William J.H. Huff. Professionally, Huff is a lawyer. He was also an editor of the New York Law School Journal of International and Comparative Law, which published in its winter 1985 issue his book-length article entitled, quote, "The Annexation of the Baltic States and Its Effect on the Development of Law Prohibiting Forcible Seizure of Territory." Huff describes the interwar period of Lithuanian history as one of, quote, "political and constitutional stability," unquote, and again quoting, "progress toward the restoration of full democracy." Just how ludicrous that interwar period of Lithuanian history, that description of Lithuanian interwar history. I think it's, in light of the fact that this was a fascist state modeled on Mussolini's Italy, I think it's pretty clear that Huff has some very serious biases. Just how serious those biases are, we are about to see. For that last sentence again. Huff describes the interwar period of Lithuanian history as one of, quote, "political and constitutional stability," unquote, and again quoting, "progress toward the restoration of full democracy," unquote. He fails to mention the collaboration of nationalists and Nazis. In his public justifications of secession, Landsbergis has frequently referred to Huff's interpretation of Lithuanian history. Huff's history of Lithuania must be reassuring to NED's ideologues and their Lithuanian clients, some of whom share a past they might reasonably prefer to forget. Interesting footnote to that passage about Huff and some of his past associations. Huff worked from 1986 to 1987 as law clerk to then New Hampshire Supreme Court Justice David Souter, recently confirmed as Bush's first appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know how significant that association is, but it certainly doesn't make me feel very good about David Souter, the unknown who's now an associate Supreme Court justice. So again, in this particular period, we're looking in this particular section here before we move on. William J.H. Huff is the individual who is operating on behalf of NED and LCRA/LIC in Vilnius, Lithuania, political advisor to Landsbergis, the head of Sąjūdis, and a person who describes fascist Lithuania as, quote, political, its period as political and constitutional stability and, quote, progress toward the restoration of full democracy. Just how ludicrous that is, we will see presently. Continuing with Banofsky's article, during the past 2 years, NED has granted $70,000 to LCRA-LIC. They are not obviously democratic organizations. Interjecting, that is something of an understatement, as we shall see. Founded in 1961 to, quote, provide the church under the Soviet oppression with spiritual and material assistance, unquote, LCRA's parent organization was the Lithuanian Roman Catholic Priests League. The quiet obscurity of this group belies the welcome they receive in the halls of power. LCRA Executive Director Father Kazimir Pujevcius, and that's spelled P-U-G-E-V-I-C-I-U-S, served in 1983 on an advisory committee to Senator Charles Percy, Republican of Illinois, then a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He was also welcomed in the Reagan White House in 1986. According to LCRA-LIC, its 1990 grant application to NED requested $618,300 and outlined its ambitious proposal as follows. Five separate pro-democratic organizations would receive technical and material aid. The first, a coalition of democratic parties enjoying broad support in Lithuania and capable of assuming leading roles in the new legislature, would receive computer and audio-visual equipment. Communications and video equipment will also be transported to the Sąjūdis Information Agency. According to NED, funds went only to Sąjūdis. That's an interjection by the author. Continuing, the second part of the project would ensure a continuous supply of much-needed paper for independent publishers and organizations. The dramatic increase in the number of democratic groups in Lithuania in the past year has caused severe shortages in the very limited pool of resources. Because of the greater degree of liberalization in Lithuania, this republic has emerged as the publishing center for the independent groups throughout the Soviet Union. Then continuing with Banofsky's text here. Within weeks of the arrival of these goods, traditional sources of information in Lithuania were suppressed or taken over by Sąjūdis. Nationalist sympathizers cut off broadcast programming from Moscow, and Lithuania was soon flooded with secessionist propaganda. In the ensuing election, Sąjūdis managed to dominate the scene by riding the crest of a wave of nationalist sentiment. It won a majority in the Seim, S-E-I-M, or Parliament. In March, a hastily convened session of Parliament voted for secession 91-38 in a matter of hours. Laws were passed curbing opposition newspapers and changing the flag and national anthem, reverting to versions in use during the nationalist period. As to whether or what of real substance had changed, Sąjūdis remained silent. Those last couple of sentences again. Laws were passed curbing opposition newspapers and changing the flag and national anthem, reverting to versions in use during the nationalist period. And a couple of pages later, there's a picture of the current Lithuanian emblem, and it shows a white knight on a red field, and it's captioned under Sąjūdis, Lithuania has replaced hammer and sickle with the white knight on a red field used by the Svandoriai during the nationalist and fascist period of the 20s and 30s. We'll go into the Svandoriai, spelled S-A-V-A-N-D-O-R-I-A-I in just a second. They were the fascist militia during the nationalist slash fascist period. They then, many of them anyway, jumped enthusiastically to the Third Reich and became Third Reich proxies during the Nazi occupation of the Baltics. So, summing up what we've seen in that particular section, again, the expansion of NED activity in Lithuania under the auspices of LCRA/LIC is paramount. It's worth noting that Sąjūdis was the main beneficiary, obviously, of this activity, in as much as William Huff was the chief advisor to Landsbergis, that they not only cut off broadcast programming from Moscow. Obviously, that's something which is going to greatly provoke Moscow. They voted for secession, and they advocated secession, but that they curbed opposition newspapers. That is anything but democratic. And they also changed the flag and the national anthem to those used during the fascist and nationalist period. Anything but democratic, and as we shall see, that is apparently symptomatic of exactly the kinds of forces being promoted in Lithuania. Continuing with Banovsky's article. To Lithuanians old enough to remember the Second World War, the energetic activities of Sąjūdis, LCRA, and LIC must seem vaguely familiar. Landsbergis' father was a member of the Svandorii, or nationalist militia, who fought the Russians in 1918 and 19, helped enforce the successive dictatorships of Voldemaris and Shimotona, and collaborated with the German occupation. The last sentence again. Landsbergis' father was a member of the Svandorii, or nationalist militia, who fought the Russians in 1918 and 19, helped enforce the successive dictatorships of Voldemaris and Shimotona, and collaborated with the German occupation. A reporter for Der Spiegel wrote in April of 1990 that, quote, everybody fears Sąjūdis. Anyone who attacks Sąjūdis is declared an enemy of the people by Landsbergis, and that happens very quickly, unquote. In addition, the Svandorii, illegal under Soviet law, have been revived under the leadership of retired army officers. And again here, I think it's worth noting that Landsbergis' father was a member of the Svandorii. In addition to banning opposition newspapers and advocating secession, the Svandorii were revived. The national anthem and flag were changed back to those that were in use during the fascist and nationalist period. And as we shall see, the Svandorii collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich during the German occupation of Lithuania. Continuing but with Banovsky's article. Prior to the German invasion in June of 1944, a Berlin-based Lithuanian Information Bureau, unquote, the propaganda arm of the Lithuanian Activist Front, a nationalist exile organization, sent the following message into Lithuania, quote, liberation is close at hand. Uprisings must be started in the cities, towns, and villages of Lithuania. Communists and other traitors must be arrested at once. The traitor will be pardoned only provided he proves beyond doubt that he has killed one Jew at least. In the book Blowback, Christopher Simpson crisply summarizes part of the, quote, liberation, unquote, that followed. Municipal killing squads employing Lithuanian Nazi collaborators eliminated 46,692 Jews in fewer than 3 months, according to their own reports, mainly by combining clock-like liquidation of 500 Jews per day in the capital city of Vilnius with mobile, quote, cleanup, unquote, sweeps through the surrounding countryside. Such squads were consistently used by the Nazis for their dirty work that even the SS believed to be beneath the dignity of the German soldier. On August 4th, 1941, the Lithuanian Activist Front, installed as a provisional government, taking care to cooperate fully with the... one more time. On August 4th, the Lithuanian Activist Front, installed as a provisional government, taking care to... this is a misprint. On August 4th, 1941, the Lithuanian Activist Front was installed as a provisional government, taking care to cooperate fully with the Nazis. The invaders let President Juozas Ambrazevičius, I'm going to call it, that name is Juozas Ambrazevičius, I'll call it, one more time. The invaders let President Juozas Ambrazevičius' government stand for 3 months, during which time the worst of the killings occurred. After the war, Ambrazevičius fled to the U.S., where he changed his name to Brazaitis, Brazaitis. The crimes which prompted the post-war flight of many Lithuanian nationalists were starkly documented in the Jaeger Report, an unofficial count by the SS officer who supervised the massacres. And that's quoted here. Einsatzkommando 3, Kovno, December 1st, 1941, secret state document. Summary of all executions carried out in the sphere of action of Einsatzkommando 3 up to December 1st, 1941. Einsatzkommando 3 took over its duties as security police in Lithuania on the second day of July, 1941. In compliance with my directives and on my order, the Lithuanian partisans have carried out the following executions. And then returning to Banofsky's text, what followed was a chronological accounting of the activities of the killing squads. Victims were neatly categorized: Jewish men, Jewish women, Jewish children, Poles, Lithuanian communists, Russian communists, intellectual Jews, lunatics, gypsies, political instructors, Armenians. After the first 3,000 deaths, Yeager apparently decided that the Lithuanian nationalists alone were not equal to the task. Again, quoting from the Third Reich document, the Yeager report, by the way, an SS report, after organizing a mobile unit under SS Obersturmführer Hamann, H-A-M-A-N-N, and 8 to 10 tried men of EK3, the following actions were carried out in cooperation with the Lithuanian partisans. Before the EK3 assumed security duties, the partisans themselves killed 4,000 Jews through pogroms and executions. I can state today that the goal of solving the Jewish problem in Lithuania has been reached by EK3. There are no Jews in Lithuania anymore except the work Jews and their families. The goal to clear Lithuania of Jews could be achieved only thanks to men who adopted my goal without any reservations and managed to secure the cooperation of the Lithuanian partisans and the respective civil offices. One more time, quoting the last couple of sentences, the goal to clear Lithuania of Jews could only be achieved thanks to men who adopted my goal without any reservations and managed to secure the cooperation of the Lithuanian partisans and the respective civil offices. The final tally of those killed was 137,346. As the report clearly indicates, the Nazis were assisted by both the paramilitary bands associated with the nationalists and by those in positions of authority, including members of the Catholic clergy. Well, summing up what we looked at in that particular section of the article, we have looked at what happened in Lithuania under the Third Reich occupation, and it should be noted that, again, Landsbergis, the head of Sejudis, aided by NED and LCRA-LIC, Landsbergis's father was a member of the Svandorii, the fascist-slash-nationalist militia, which collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich. Recall that Sejudis and Landsbergis changed the Lithuanian flag and national anthem to those in use during the fascist and nationalist period. It should be noted also that the Svandorii, illegal under Soviet law, were revived by Landsbergis and Sejudis, and this is an organization which collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich in their brutal excesses in Lithuania during the Second World War. It should also be noted here that Archbishop Marcinkus, who we looked at in connection with the Vatican banking scandals and with the P2 machinations inside the Vatican, is also Lithuanian, also from the Chicago area. And as we're going to see, Bishop Burgess, if that's the correct pronunciation of the name, is also from that area. Note also, before we move on, that the fellow Jesus Ambrzevis, Ambrzevicius, I'm going to call it Ambrzevicius, again, fled to the United States, which has proved such a very safe haven for so many fascists and Nazis over the years. Continuing with the next section here of Banofsky's article, as auxiliary bishop of Kaunas, or Kovno, K-A-U-N-A-S, or K-O-V-N-O, during the German occupation, Bishop Vincentius Burgess, founder of LCRA-LIC, lent his spiritual authority to fascism. When the Nazis retreated, so did he. First to Germany, then to Chicago, where he has lived, worked, and carried the nationalist banner for 25 years. Bear in mind, this is the fellow who founded LCRA-LIC, the organization being used by NED and the U.S. National Security Establishment to interfere in the affairs of Lithuania. The clergy hated socialism for very clear reasons. The socialist government, which came to power in 1939, had separated church and state. Church property was confiscated, including large farms where peasants labored under semi-feudal conditions eliminated elsewhere in Europe centuries before. Clergy were removed from government and the educational system, two institutions where they had long wielded powerful influence. Archbishop Schwerekus, I'm going to call it, S-K-V-I-R-E-C-K-S, Burgess Superior, documented the bishop's collaborationist activities with evident satisfaction. The Archbishop's diary for July 1, 1941, reveals that Burgess made contact, quote, with the representative of the German government for the Baltic states, Dr. Gruffe, G-R-O-F-F-E, formerly head of Gestapo in East Prussia, who proposed that he, Burgess should make an appeal to the people to behave quietly and pursue their daily business with confidence without any fear that they might be harmed. One more time, Archbishop Shverekis, Burgess' superior, documented the bishop's collaborationist activities with evident satisfaction. The Archbishop's diary for July 1, 1941 reveals that Burgess made contact, quote, with the representative of the German government for the Baltic states, Dr. Gruffe, formerly head of Gestapo in East Prussia, who proposed that he, Burgess, should make an appeal to the people to behave quietly and pursue their daily business with confidence without any fear that they might be harmed, unquote. Bear in mind, once again, the fellow that Archbishop Shverekis is referring to is his immediate subordinate, Burgess, who is the head and founder, or was the founder, I should say, of LCRALIC, the main U.S. vehicle for involvement in Lithuania. Continuing here with the article. On June 30th of 1941, the Archbishop had written, quote, the ideas in Mein Kampf on the question of the Bolshevik Jewish contagion are splendid. They prove that Hitler is not only an enemy of the Jews, but generally speaking, has the right ideas. One more time, this is the fellow who heads, who founded LCRALIC, Archbishop Vincentus Burgess. On June 30th, 1941, the Archbishop had written, quote, the ideas in Mein Kampf on the question of the Bolshevik Jewish contagion are splendid. They prove that Hitler is not only an enemy of the Jews, but generally speaking has the right ideas, unquote. An appeal to welcome the Nazis was broadcast by radio, then published in a major Kaunas newspaper signed by Shverekis, Burgess, and Vicar General Saulus. That's S-A-U-L-Y-S. Their signatures were also on a formal telegram of thanks to Hitler for, quote, Lithuania's liberation, sent in the middle of July of 1941. That telegram and those obnoxious views, again, coming from Burgess. Continuing with Banowski's text, as the Nazis and their collaborators implemented the diabolical logic of Mein Kampf, Burgess, quote, set an example for the entire population by forbidding the clergy to aid the Jews in any way, unquote. He also urged from his pulpit and via radio and newspaper that Lithuanians cooperate with the Nazis. When the Soviet Army, led by its 16th Lithuanian Division, drove the Nazis out in 1944, Burgess fled to safety in Germany and then to the U.S. Sent to the Archdiocese of Chicago, he helped launch Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid in 1961 and served as LCRA president until 1986. He is now chair of the board of directors. Well, that passage tragically and disgustingly speaks very clearly for itself. Archbishop Burgess obviously was an enthusiastic Third Reich proxy and worked hand in glove with the Third Reich, and not only was it a practical consideration, he obviously was in agreement with the goals of the Third Reich. Another interesting connection here is discussed by, and it's also worth noting again that he fled first to Germany, then to the U.S., and settled in Chicago, which is where Archbishop Marcinkus also comes from, himself a Lithuanian, and in light of the pro-fascist and pro-U.S. intelligence activities of the P2, founded by Licio Gelli, himself an Oberleutnant in the SS, Archbishop Marcinkus' situation and possible, I say possible connection to Archbishop Burgess and the events and elements we're talking about here are to be borne in mind. Continuing here with the very last section of this article that I'm going to read, a couple of other interesting connections here of LCRA, LIC. Director of Special Projects for LCRA, LIC is Raza Rajgaitis, R-A-Z-G-A-I-T-I-S, stepdaughter of accused war criminal Jurgis Juodis, J-U-R-G-I-S, J-U-O-D-I-S. Because of his involvement as a nationalist military officer in the massacres of 1941, Juodis became the subject of a Justice Department Office of Special Investigations, or OSI, inquiry in 1981. In addition to her work with LCRA, Rasgaitis is head of, quote, Americans for Due Process, unquote, an organization, quote, formed solely to challenge the activities of the Justice Department's War Crimes Unit, unquote. She is also a friend of Patrick Buchanan, through whom she gained access to the Reagan White House when Buchanan was communications director. Just as Landsbergis, the head of Sejudis's father, was a member of the Sfondorii, the fascist militia, and just as he revived not only the fascist national anthem and flag in Lithuania, and revived the Sfondorii, the enthusiastic collaborators with the Nazis in the excesses I've described here, so this other key member of LCRA, the director of special projects, is the daughter of another accused war criminal, also tight with Patrick Buchanan. Continuing here, AFL-CIO President Lane Kirkland is a longtime member of the Cold Warrior Clique Committee on the Present Danger and supports CIA manipulation of labor movements around the globe. Kirkland has welcomed Landsbergis as a friend during his U.S. visits. Kirkland's name was on an open letter to President Bush published in the April 22, 1990 New York Times, calling for immediate recognition of Lithuanian independence. Kirkland is on the NED board.
Back again from AFA 36 from February of 1991. This concludes For the Record program number 848, Walking the Snake in the Baltic States. This has been recorded on May 30th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.